Kunja Bihari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Girivara Dhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Om Vishnupad Paramahamsa Vrivraja Kacharya Stotarasata Shri Srimad, His Divine Grace, Abhaya Charanada Vinda Bhakti Vedanta Swami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Nantakodi Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai, Namacharya Haridas Thakur Ki Jai, Premsikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Garadhar Shivasari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai, Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gop Gopinath Yamakunda Radha Kundagiri Govardhan Ki Jai, Vrindavan Dham Ki Jai, Mayapur Dham Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dham Ki Jai, Gangamayi Jamunamayi Ki Jai, Gaura Premanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shishi Guru and Gauranga. Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine, Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine.
When does the class stop? How late is it going? How long? Till 6 o'clock? Oh, how are you going? So I thought today we'd read from the chapter 6 of Bhagavad Gita, text 20 through 23, which is four verses. So it's a little bit long, and it's a little bit long purport. But I'll read the Sanskrit, and then we can do one verse together. Yatra paramate chittang nirodhang yoga sevaya yatra chayvatmanatmanang pashyanatmani tushyati sukham atyantikang yattad buddhigrahyam atindriyam veti yatra na chayvayam stitash chalati tatvataha Yang labdhva chaparang labhang manyate nadhikang tataha yasmin stito nadukhena gurunapi vichalyate tang vidya dukha sangyoga vyogang yoga sangyatam. All right, let's do the last two verses. If someone wants to start, if someone wants to recite Yang labdhva chaparang labhang.
Yasmin stito nadukhena.
sthitanidikena gurunapi vichalyate tang vidya dukkha sangyoga viyogang yoga sangitam.
And someone can do the whole verse starting with yang labdva chaparang labham.
Yang labdva chaparang labham manyate nadhikang tataha yasmin stitona dukena gurunapi vichalyate tang vidya dukkha sangyoga biyogang yoga sangitam.
Ladies.
Manyate nadikang tadha yasmin stito nadukhena gurunapi vichalyate tang vidya dukkha sangyoga biyogang yoga sangitam.
One more.
Yang labdva chaparang labhang manyate nadhi tantataha yasmin stito nadukena gurunapi vichalyate tang vidya dukkha sangyoga Vyogang yoga sangitam.
So I'll just do the translation. In the stage of perfection called trance or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, one is situated in boundless transcendental happiness realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken, even in the midst of greatest difficulty. This is indeed actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. Let's please repeat. In the stage of perfection called trance, or samadhi, one's mind is completely restrained from material mental activities by practice of yoga. This perfection is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in the self. In that joyous state, One is situated in boundless transcendental happiness, realized through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth. And upon gaining this, he thinks there is no greater gain. Being situated in such a position, one is never shaken. Even in the midst of greatest difficulty, this indeed is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. Hari Bol. Let's read the purport. Maybe I'll stop at parts and talk a little bit in between, but we'll get through the whole purport. It is a little long. By practice of yoga, one becomes gradually detached from material concepts. This is the primary characteristic of the yoga principle. And after this, one becomes situated in trance or samadhi, which means that the yogi realizes the supersoul through transcendental mind and intelligence without any of the misgivings of identifying the self with the superself. So there already, Srila Prabhupada is distinguishing that some philosophers misunderstand and believe that in the state of samadhi, one becomes one with the super-self rather than being able to perceive the super-self through transcendental senses. Yoga practice is more or less based on the principles of the Patanjali system. Some unauthorized commentators try to identify the individual soul with the super-soul, and the monists think this to be liberation, but they do not understand the real purpose of the Patanjali system of yoga. There is an acceptance of transcendental pleasure in the Patanjali system, but the monists do not accept this transcendental pleasure out of fear of jeopardizing the theory of oneness. The duality of knowledge and knower is not accepted by the non-dualist, but in this verse, transcendental pleasure realized through transcendental senses is accepted. And this is corroborated by Patanjali Muni, the famous exponent of the yoga system. The great sage declares in his Yoga Sutras, Purushartha shunyanam gunanam prati prasavaha kaivalyang swarupa pratishta va chitti shaktir iti. This chitti shakti, or internal potency, is transcendental. Purushartha means material religiosity, economic development, sense gratification, and at the end, the attempt to become one with the supreme. This oneness with the supreme is called kaivalyam by the monist, but according to Patanjali, this kaivalyam is an internal or transcendental potency by which the living entity becomes aware of his constitutional position. In the words of Lord Chaitanya, this state of affairs is called Cheto Dharpana Marjanam, or clearance of the impure mirror of the mind. This clearance is actually liberation, or Bhava Mahadav Agni Nirvapanam. The theory of nirvana, also preliminary, corresponds with this principle. In the Bhagavatam 2.10.6, this is called Swarupena Vyavastitihi. The Bhagavad Gita also confirms this situation in this verse. So is this a little too heavy for a Sunday feast lecture? But basically, first of all, the yoga system, as described by Patanjali, is actually for realizing Krishna through transcendental senses. That at least we can perceive the supersoul as described in this verse by the help of this chitti shakti. The definition is, what is it? Yogash chitta vritti nirodha, right? That the yoga means to stop the mental, because in a material conditioned state, where our mind is always accepting and rejecting things, trying to enjoy material enjoyment, and this is actually like clouding our original pure consciousness. It's keeping us from experiencing real happiness. So the yoga system is to become unlimitedly happy. Krishna's describing that, unlimited happiness. Just like we're feeling happiness when we chant Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada, when he talks about the sixth chapter, he often points out how this yoga system of the eightfold path of yama, niyama, etc., asana, and pratyahara, pranayama, ultimately leading to samadhi, is very difficult to perform, and in this age hardly anyone can do it, but this process of chanting Hare Krishna, the Hare Krishna mantra, it achieves the same result and better in an easier way that we're capable of performing. So we're capable of actually achieving samadhi, or that's the purpose. We're supposed to be moving toward achieving samadhi through this Krishna consciousness movement, through this Krishna consciousness process of worshiping the deities, taking prasadam, chanting the holy names, dancing. Srila Prabhupada is establishing here that, you know, Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, he's describing all the Vedic knowledge, but in the context of his ultimate teaching of bhakti yoga. So in chapter 6, he's explaining the ultimate progression to samadhi through this Ashtanga yoga system, which is difficult to practice in this age. But at the end of the chapter, he confirms that his devotee is the most united with him in yoga. So it's not like that the devotees are missing anything from yoga practice. A lot of times people are attracted to yoga nowadays But in popular culture, it's misunderstood that it's something to just to keep you healthy or to make you slim or maybe to make you feel some peace, but not really, not many people really take up the full understanding of this the system taught by the sage Patanjali and the also the different philosophies described in the Vedas. That the yoga philosophy is similar to the Sankhya philosophy. But besides going into that, let's go on with this. This ultimate goal of yoga is to become very happy. And this Krishna consciousness movement, Srila Prabhupada said in the early days, his followers had come from the hippie community, and he said he was making hippies into happies. So this chanting Hare Krishna makes us experience this kind of happiness that's a different, it's not material happiness, it's not based on sangsparsha cha bhoga, it's not material happiness that's from the contact of our material senses. Rather, that kind of happiness is very limited. Our body dies, it's temporary. Yehi sangsparsha cha bhoga dukha yonaya evate adyantavanta kaunteya nateshu ramate buddha. In the previous chapter, Krishna's explaining that a wise person doesn't seek after this sangsparsha cha bhoga, this material happiness of contact with the senses. They do their duty, but they understand that they're the soul. And while the body is taking things, eating, opening the eyes, closing the eyes, doing different material engagements of the senses with their activities, that Krishna describes the soul as like living happily within the city of nine gates, being the body, that he understands that his senses are interacting with the sense objects, but that the soul itself has got his own engagement in spiritual activity, devotional, in meditation or devotional service. After nirvana, so here in the Bhagavatam 2.10.16, it's called Swarupena Vyavastitihi. Here in this verse also we see I think the word Swarupa, at any rate, he's describing that one is becoming situated in one's own actual spiritual identity. After nirvana or material cessation, there is the manifestation of spiritual activities or devotional service to the Lord, known as Krishna consciousness. In the words of the Bhagavatam, Swarupena Vyavastiti, this is the real life of the living entity. Maya, or illusion, is the condition of spiritual life contaminated by material infection. Liberation from this material infection does not mean destruction of the original eternal position of the living entity. Patanjali also accepts this by his words, Kaivalyang Swarupa Pratishta Va Chitti Shakti Riti. Is that in this verse? No, but that's in the Yoga Sutras. This chitti shakti, or transcendental pleasure, is real life. This is confirmed in Vedanta Sutra 1.1.12 as Ananda Mayobhyasat. This natural transcendental pleasure is the ultimate goal of yoga and is easily achieved by the execution of devotional service or bhakti yoga. Bhakti yoga will be vividly described in the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So Srila Prabhupada breaks down the Bhagavad Gita. He says the first six chapters deal with mainly with karma yoga. The last six chapters deal mainly with jnana yoga. And the confidential subject of bhakti yoga is protected in the middle by these two sides, is bhakti yoga that we hear in chapter 7 through 12. And ananda mayobhyasat, it's our nature to want to be happy. It's actually the nature of the absolute truth to seek happiness. And our existence is part of his engagement of happiness. Or we're coming on July 4th, so we can talk about the pursuit of happiness, the Declaration of Independence. So the pursuit of happiness, it shouldn't be pursued through just trying to enjoy material senses, which is available, Lord Rishabhadev says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it's available to animals even. They're also experiencing that kind of happiness. But there's a higher kind of happiness that we can experience by purification of our existence. And this is the real scientific process of bhakti yoga. It's not just a religion that, you know, you have some kind of faith and you belong to some kind of community and that's And that's the end of it. It's actually, we're supposed to be learning to achieve this samadhi. It's a gradual process, but we're learning to control our senses and become indifferent to material happiness and distress because we're absorbed in some other, a much higher standard of happiness, right? Parang drishtva nivartate. So this anandamaya abhyasat, we're seeking after happiness, but we're seeking in the wrong way in our material condition. We're thinking we have to satisfy our material false ego, our material conception of ourselves, our material body. But actually, when we satisfy Krishna's senses, we automatically become unlimitedly happy. The Ashtanga yogi practitioners, they meditate and meditate until they can finally perceive the super soul. But then for the devotional yogis, we understand the super soul is a person that can interact with us, that has his own senses, his own pleasure, his own desires, and we serve those desires and we can engage in actual pastimes, in actual service, active service with transcendental senses. That's something that not every philosopher understands, that the soul by its nature is active and possesses its own senses, its own ability to interact with the Supreme Person as a devotee, an eternal, transcendental, loving servant. In the yoga system, as described in this chapter, there are two kinds of samadhi called sampragyata samadhi and asampragyata samadhi. When one becomes situated in the transcendental position by various philosophical researches, he is said to have achieved sampragyata samadhi. In the asampragyata samadhi, there is no longer any connection with mundane pleasure, for one is then transcendental to all sorts of happiness derived from the senses. When the yogi is once situated in that transcendental position, he is never shaken from it. Unless the yogi is able to reach this position, he is unsuccessful. Today's so-called yoga practice, which involves various sense pleasures, is contradictory. A yogi indulging in sex and intoxication is a mockery. Even those yogis who are attracted by the siddhis, perfections in the process of yoga, are not perfectly situated. If yogis are attracted by the byproducts of yoga, then they cannot attain the stage of perfection, as is stated in this verse. Persons, therefore, indulging in the make-show practice of gymnastic feats or siddhis should know that the aim of yoga is lost in that way. I was reading in the New York Times one time, they were interviewing people in New York that had a yoga studio, and they were saying that it was just like, you know, you have French cuisine and then, you know, Californians can make it different into California cuisine. And so we Americans are making yoga in this way. It's about what do they call it? Like being present or something. So he said, we have our yoga practice, then we drink some wine and we eat some bacon and experience it. You know, we're being present in our experience and so forth. And it's just, you know, completely contrary to to what actual yoga practice is. And even this kind of yoga practice being described by Krishna, going to a secluded place, sitting by oneself on a deerskin and a soft cloth so that the deerskin protects you from snakes because you're out in the forest and you have to sit there all day and just concentrate the mind on the super soul, transcendence. It's very, very difficult to perform. Even the bhakti yoga that we're doing, is Lord Chaitanya is giving very freely, but to actually do it correctly, right, it takes a little bit of determination and self-control. Wake up early, chant our rounds, be attentive, chant attentive rounds, pay attention to the deity worship. So this kind of yoga practice that's described here, Arjuna said, I can't see how I can do it. And Srila Prabhupada points out, Krishna never actually recommended Arjuna to do that. Krishna recommended him to fight the battle, to rule over a prosperous kingdom, and to be his devotee. So the best practice of yoga in this age is Krishna consciousness, which is not baffling. A Krishna conscious person is so happy in his occupation that he does not aspire after any other happiness. There are many impediments, especially in this age of hypocrisy, to practicing Hatha Yoga, Dhyana Yoga, and Jnana Yoga, but there is no such problem in executing Karma Yoga or Bhakti Yoga. As long as the material body exists, one has to meet the demands of the body, namely eating, sleeping, defending, and mating. But a person who is in pure Bhakti Yoga or in Krishna consciousness does not arouse the senses while meeting the demands of the body. Rather, he accepts the bare necessities of life, making the best use of a bad bargain, and enjoys transcendental happiness in Krishna consciousness. I'm getting a little static here. He is callous towards incidental occurrences such as accidents, disease, scarcity, and even the death of a most dear relative. But he is always alert to execute his duties in Krishna consciousness or bhakti yoga. Accidents never deviate him from his duty. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 2.14, Agama Payino Nityas, Tangs Tatikshas Vibharata. He endures all such incidental occurrences because he knows that they come and go and do not affect his duties. In this way, he achieves the highest perfection in yoga practice. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jnananjana Shlakaya Chakshurun Miditangyena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitang Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Tadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padagamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavangscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatan Bitang Tang Sajivam Sadvaitam Sabadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Bitangscha Hare Krishna. So before we talk some more about it, does anyone have any response or realizations or questions or discussion about what we've just read so far? Haribol Prabhu. Yep. Microphones.
Makes it simple. Yoga comes, you know, yoke to connect. So the idea is, what is yoga? Ultimately is to connect with Krishna.
Yeah. Even the word religion, I'm not a scholar of these languages, but like ligaments, it's like a cognate of the word, like it's to reconnect or retie ourselves to God, that we're somehow separated from God and we have to return or to return to that transcendental absolute position. So yoga conveys the same idea. The word yoke, like a yoke of an oxen, is apparently a cognate. A lot of these words in English and or in Latin or in German originate in Sanskrit words, in Greek and Latin as well. So yoga means relinking ourselves with our actual spiritual activities and our spiritual identity. And to do that, we have to quiet down the mind, which is busy trying to enjoy material happiness, the pursuit of happiness. We don't know how to pursue happiness properly. There's a higher happiness we experience internally, right? And all of the devotees experience it. There's a higher sense of happiness we can feel when chanting Hare Krishna than in the kind of intoxication of material happiness of thinking, oh, you know, I've just won a prize, or I made so much money, or I'm so respected by everybody. These kind of happiness is very temporary. It's external, and it's not as blissful. There's not ananda there. Hare Krishna, thank you very much for coming. So, this yoga system is for experiencing this higher happiness, and Lord Chaitanya has made it very easy by this practice of chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Mantra comes from these words, manas, the mind, tra, to release or to set free. That our mind is right now absorbed in trying to, in our conditioned state, the mind is trying to think, how can I satisfy my material senses? How can I satisfy my material false ego, my material conception of who I am in this body? But when the mind is released from that, when it's cleared away from those kind of things, through chanting Hare Krishna, then we experience the actual original transcendental mind and senses, which are thinking, how can I please Krishna? How can I please my spiritual master? And so that position of never being deviated, even in the most difficulty, yang loved va chaparang labhang manyate nati kang tata yasmin stito na dukhena guru napi vachalyate. That's a very high state. And that's the state that Srila Prabhupada is bringing us, this method to achieve that state of becoming free from the miseries. They're only external to us. They're only temporary. And when we're experiencing great happiness in Krishna consciousness, the temporary miseries of the body won't disturb us so much. We'll feel, it's not that we become unconscious, although Lord Chaitanya would sometimes in his great ecstasy become completely unconscious. But it's that we're feeling, I stubbed my toe, it really hurts, but it doesn't interfere with our sense of great happiness from our relationship with Krishna and our love of Krishna. And this, we're practicing this in this Krishna consciousness movement to achieve that success, which is Krishna is saying that this is actual freedom from all miseries arising from material contact. Tang vidya dukkha sangyoga viyogam yoga sangyatam. This is the process for achieving freedom from all miseries. Yes, please. Bring the microphone.
Hare Krishna.
Hare
Thank
Krishna.
You for a wonderful Sunday Love Feast lecture. I just wanted to say that Srila Prabhupada says that yoga means controlling the mind. One of the things he says about yoga. Yoga is to control the mind. And our mind is constantly being pulled by our imperfect senses. Seeing, hearing, touch, sound, I said hearing, our four senses. And the senses are connected to, in the science, the part of the brain, the brain stem, that's referred to the lizard brain. And so we have these reactions and impulses in yoga. Is a process to control the mind, and that's why the yoking stem of the word comes into yoking ourselves to God, to Krishna, so we can control our mind and be free of all of these things that are making us unhappy.
Jai, very good point. This lizard brain is very deep, isn't it? Our intuition to try to satisfy our material body or our material sense of ourself, it's, you know, this kama esha, krodha esha, this lust is very deeply ingrained. It's achieved these sitting places in the mind, the intelligence, and the senses. And it's bewildering our real knowledge and covering our real knowledge. This was discussed in chapter 3. I saw a hand over here. Okay.
I was just going to say that the beauty of bhakti yoga is that it's a yoga of love and devotion, and that ultimately that's what everyone's looking for, is love. I love the introduction to Nectar Devotion where Prabhupada describes, like, the child, the first love is the love of his mother, you know, and father, and then it goes to the rest of the family members, and then maybe out, you know, he has friends. And then it can go to the state, or it can go to the love of the nation, or even love of the world. And it can even spread to, you know, the love of animals, the understanding, you know, of the spirit soul. But ultimately, that love of God, that love of Krishna, is what makes bhakti yoga so special and so superior, because everybody wants that love. Like, you practice hatha yoga, do all the, you know, perfectly do all the different poses and asanas, but unless you add that element of love, right?
Right. I'm sorry that we're getting some static, but yes, it's very natural. Our original nature is to be loving servants of Krishna, so this is the very natural way. The too much static. The The Ashtanga yoga practice is a mechanical way to withdraw the mind from pratyahara, withdraw it from its material engagements. But by engaging the mind in its natural actual engagement of serving Krishna with love, that's real love. Actually, all these other loves, these relatives' loves, love of your own family, means you're loving this one and you're not loving someone else. You know, love of, you're always, you know, the material politicians are always making friends and enemies. But so Arjuna, even he was in Maya thinking that I shouldn't fight the battle, but he asked Krishna to take his chariot between the two armies because as a saintly person, he had a sense of not wanting to just be concerned for his own family or his own welfare, but to think in terms of what's right and what's wrong. But then he wasn't thinking, in the beginning, he wasn't thinking of what does Krishna want. And that's the real love. The love of Krishna is the eternal, original, pure spiritual condition of consciousness. And now I'm sorry about the sound system and the static we're getting.
Static makes it extra bonus. How to understand the higher stages you can achieve when you may achieve lesser goals and be satisfied with that, you know? So let's say you get to this platform and you're satisfied with that, but you don't know there is actually much more than that level. So here, talk about freedom from material miseries, no? And maybe you are there and say, okay, that's it, I'm done, I made it here. So how do we present people can become aware of the higher stages, you know, how they're much more than what you achieve, you know. Maybe yeah. You're in peace now, maybe you have miseries, less miseries, but there is a lot more than that. And I think that's what she was saying about the love. But
yeah, Srila Prabhupada's pointing that out on this purport. Are you Gandini? I didn't recognize you my eyes aren't so good until I heard your voice. I'm glad you're here. She was asking about the Bhaktivedanta Institute earlier. And everyone should attend these the summer lecture. What is it called? Summer? Say in the microphone. Oh no. Summer Discovery Series. So it's in the newsletter. We can look for that, and we have some talks by some very elevated and scholarly devotees. But yeah, Srila Prabhupada is pointing that out, that some people will think that just becoming, experiencing Brahmananda or this nirvana, the cessation of the material distress, is the ultimate goal, and they don't go to the next level, to the higher level, which is that we actually have this chitti shakti, we actually have transcendental senses, this transcendental energy where we actually can experience and interact with the super soul, not identify that we are the super soul, but serve him. Then the super soul becomes alive for us as Bhagavan. He has his own entourage, his own friends and family and qualities and pastimes, and we can assist in those pastimes and serve him in different ways, serving the servants of his servants in love. And that's the real Vaikuntha platform, which is an unlimitedly higher kind of happiness. So in neutrality, one may just behold, oh, I'm seeing God and feel very blissful. But when one actually becomes a servant and engages in the activities of service, of loving service, that bliss is described as millions of times higher. And then our acharyas describe these different primary rasas. See, even in the midst of difficult situations, of static in the thing, we can talk about Krishna. But thank you for all your wonderful comments. Does someone else have some more comments? Yes, here, please.
I have a question. Thank you so much for this talk. It's very thought-provoking. So my understanding of, you know, the highest states of Krishna consciousness is that no matter what's happening on a material plane, you're consistently in bliss because you're consistently remembering Krishna. You're always remembering Krishna. But at this particular moment, I'm not at that stage. And
me
so
neither.
I'm just curious about, I'm having this experience where I'm quite new to Krishna consciousness, and I'm exploring all the different avenues there are for service. And there are times where I am enacting service, and I'm, you know, in some sort of bliss where there's no time, I don't have hunger, I don't have needs, like I'm just able to continue moving and working and going. And then there are some times where, you know, time feels like 1 minute is several lifetimes, and it's very difficult. But it's like the thing that is needed in the moment. And so I'm just curious on your perspective, like, if the idea of Krishna consciousness is that we always come into a state of happiness, how do we navigate between, like, do we begin to turn ourselves specifically towards these services where we are experiencing this state of flow and this sense of connection, and begin to curate away those services where we're not experiencing that? Or do we continue to lean into these services that are difficult, even though they're difficult?
Yeah, a lot depends on our spiritual duties aren't always necessarily going to be easy for us, and we should, with the help of our spiritual master, learn what duties we need to perform. Srila Prabhupada had this intense eagerness to spread this Krishna consciousness movement through book distribution, publication activities, but also, you know, that so some services someone may like being a pujari, but may not like going out and confronting people and trying to distribute a book to them or something. But yet, you know, whatever our service is, it's all part of the process. The essential thing is our japa and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, like we're doing now, hearing Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam. This is very essential to everything. And seeing the deity worship is very important. Chanting in the kirtan is often a time when some people say, that's when I really experience that time has stopped and I'm just, you know. Yikes. I'm not going to say that. Yet you should find a service that, with the help of advanced devotees, instructing spiritual masters, initiating spiritual masters, find devotional service that you are helping push this movement forward, helping doing something that's pleasing, and yet that you can be peaceful doing. We have to arrange our lives, you know. Many of us are householders, or we become householders. We have children, we have to care for our children. That's an essential duty. We can't make the mistake of thinking, like Srila Prabhupada wrote one letter to one of his disciples. She said, well, I have this baby now. I can't do so much deity worship. Can I give the baby away so that I can? And Prabhupada said, no, your baby is your deity. You know, it's just, that's your, but not, the understanding is not just to be absorbed in ordinary mundane affection, but to raise children in Krishna consciousness so that they'll be the next generation leading this Krishna consciousness movement. We go out to get people to become devotees and to become inspired in devotional service, but sometimes they find that when the going gets tough after some time, or they reach some plateau, they feel like, well, maybe there's something I can do, something else and more enjoyable with my life, and they go away. We've seen that happen. So we have to organize this Krishna consciousness movement so that they don't do that. But it's a gradual process. It's not like your service is always going to be giving you bliss. The bliss should come from your recognition that you're a spirit soul, an eternal servant of Krishna, and you're trying to satisfy Krishna with the prescribed duties that you've been given. But these essential duties, chanting your rounds, seeing the deity worship, it's actually having powerful, powerful effect on the heart. It's destroying lots of bad karma, right? And it's purifying, right? Chaito Darpana Marjanam, it's purifying the heart. So these services that we do, active services, it's encouraged that we also do services with our senses. We work with our hands, and according to our psychophysical nature, we should have some duties in life that we perform within the Varnashram system. Although it's in the current age and our current society, it's not exactly, you know, established that way. But we should have our duties that we do even in our life as well. Most devotees eventually I have to earn a living, and the early days, the devotees would just go out and chant on the street, and eventually they started finding that people would give them a donation. So then they started passing a conch shell around and getting it filled up with donations. Otherwise, how were they going to pay the rent at the temple and stuff? One time, I think Shyamasundar was walking, or it might have been Malati or both of them, who were walking down the street in San Francisco, and they were thinking, like, how are we going to pay the bills? And then they saw, like, a $100 bill floating down the street. And they picked it up, and then there were more and more of them. Somehow or another, there were these $100 bills. Someone falling out of somebody's car or something like that. So, all right, that's how we're going to do it. But they were just intent on serving Prabhupada, and then some of that Krishna magic sometimes happens. But in general, people have to... have jobs, whatever they have to do. And not everybody can be like a sannyasi or a brahmachari all their lives. The idea is to not do it for personal gain. Like Arjuna, he was, fighting a battle. He wasn't just sitting and meditating. He said, why are you telling me this? Why shouldn't I just sit and meditate? Krishna said, no, you have to do your duty as a kshatriya. But do it in yoga, do it armed in yoga, do it with the understanding that you're a servant of Krishna and that you're making it as an offering. Yat kuroshi yat ashnasi yat juhoshi didasi yat yat tapasasi konte yat tat kurushva manarpanam. Eating prasadam is also very important for devotees, otherwise we're, yagya shishtashana muchante sarvakilbishai bunjate te tvagam papa. Otherwise we're eating sin, we're engaging our senses in material activities, we're just creating new vrittis instead of, nirodha means stopping the vrittis, right? Instead of the chitta vritti nirodha, we're creating new vrittis to prolong our stay in the material world. But no, it's a very good question, a very practical question. All the devotees struggle with it, but don't ever leave. Prabhupada is giving us such, we can't imagine how much wisdom and mercy that Srila Prabhupada is giving, and most of the people in the world can't perceive it. Even very intelligent, scholarly people who know Sanskrit, other things, they somehow can't perceive it. But we're very fortunate that somehow or another we've gotten this mercy and hang on very tight to his lotus feet. And yes, we're on the way to ultimate happiness. Whether, don't expect it to happen in the next week or next year, maybe even more. It's like a lifetime of practice, but the process really works. Anything else? So I was reading something that Bhaktivedanta Swami had written there. He's saying it's not a religion, it's a science. And, that we shouldn't just take it that we belong to some faith community, but we're actually practicing something that actually leads us to this ultimate state of pure devotional service. And it really works, and it's not like, oh, we believe in reincarnation, but somebody else doesn't or something like that. No, whether we believe it or not believe it, when you die, if you're not, completely free from the false ego, from the intention to enjoy material happiness, you have to get another body to try to enjoy material happiness with, grouped around the mind, as Krishna describes in the 15th chapter. So he says that the yogis who are trained, they can see how it's happening. They can directly see it. It's an actual science. But people who don't have that training, they're not able to see it. So they have a different understanding of science based on a different epistemology of just this material sense perception with your untrained senses. But this is an actual science. It's actually the path to unlimited happiness, the path to perfection of yoga, and it's very joyful, right? Pratyaksha bhagamang dharmyang susukam kartam avyayam. So pratyaksha, it's directly perceived, and susukam, it's very happily done. And avyayam, it's not like we're doing it and then at some point we're going to give it up later. But it's inexhaustible, it's everlasting, everlasting and joyfully performed. Hare Krishna, all glories to Prabhupada, glories to Guru and Gauranga, Haribol.